Well, I had no idea what was going to be happening. They were in federal custody, and I didn't know whether the federal government was going to continue to have jurisdiction over the case or not, but it turned out that the Attorney General thought it was in everybody's best interest to send these cases to Virginia to be tried.
Did you get a chance to lobby to get the case first?
No, I really didn't care whether I got it or not. I assumed it sooner or later would come my way. And I was rather surprised when the Attorney General's office called and asked me to go to the Justice Department, and I didn't know where that was. Very impressive building, and the Attorney General had a little reception or a meeting with us before we had a press conference, and that was pretty much it.
Did the Attorney General talk with you? You know, what kind of case can you make?
No, I think he knew that we intended to prosecute him for capital murder, and that, in fact, I had said that publicly. If we did get the cases, it appeared to me to be the type of case where the capital punishment was appropriate. And that's in fact, I said that from the get-go. It was clear at the time of the killing, I went to the scene, that the same person was committing these crimes, and it certainly fell in the purview of capital punishment, inasmuch as it was a vile crime, and it certainly was a danger to society. You know, it was clear that this case, if ever was a case that justified a death penalty, this was it. And this, I've had the dubious distinction of having a lot of capital cases, and I think because of my past history and Mr. Horan's past history, the Attorney General felt that we would be people that could adequately prosecute these people.
You did win a conviction. Did you feel pressure to have the sentence be death?
No, I felt the jury was going to do what they felt was just, and the evidence was there, and they were qualified to consider the death penalty as well as something lesser. And you never know. It only takes one person who has second thoughts. And but in any event, I was prepared to prosecute Malvo and ask for the death penalty when the Supreme Court came down and said that juveniles would not be eligible for that.
That jury chose life rather than the
right. Malvo received a life sentence as opposed to the death penalty in Chesapeake, and that's one. I think maybe that finding was one of the things that gave the Supreme Court some idea that they may be in a position to excuse juveniles from the death penalty.
How so? What do you mean?
They're looking at what happens. I think. Justices being what they are, they know the effect of their decision. Had they forgiven him after he'd received the death penalty, I think there'd been more of an outcry against ruling that juveniles were no longer eligible for the death penalty.
After getting the death penalty in this case, you did something for the first time.
Well, this was the first time that I had ever witnessed an execution. And the task force, which works so closely and still stays in touch, we met there with a lot of the victims, and I did witness that execution for the first time.
I seem to recall that night that you said his death was a lot easier than the victims.
It was sort of anticlimactic. He just went to sleep. He never had a word to say from the time he was arrested till the time he was executed. He never admitted that he did it, never said he was sorry, no remorse. He certainly was a dangerous person, and he was able to terrorize this whole metropolitan area.
Seeing the execution, have you ever had nightmares?
No. I take no pleasure in seeking the death penalty, but I think in there are certain cases, they're very limited under our system of jurisprudence, but there are certain cases where the death penalty is a reasonable and just decision and punishment for certain people.